Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we welcome back Melinda Myers. Oh, she is a nationally known gardening expert, TV radio host, author. She's had over 20 gardening books published, she's written. And we'll talk about ways you can keep your garden looking great all through the summer. And also we'll be looking at ways to make your garden water-wise. So what's going on in your garden? What are your gardening questions? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page. Just search for The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. Welcome back, Melinda.
Hey, it's always great to chat gardening with you, and it means summer is here, and hopefully we're all having a great time in the garden and soon be picking some goodies if you're not already.
How's your garden looking?
Well, I'm a little, you know, I'm always running around telling everyone else what to do, so I'm a little late, but I have to tell you, I did this, I think I mentioned it last time, or if you follow my e-newsletter, I did an earliest tomato video for a client, and they wanted it done by the middle of March. I had to remind them I'm in Wisconsin, but I did plant in early April, and I have a couple of good-sized, full-size tomato plants with good-sized tomatoes starting to ripen. So I planted six. Three succumbed to the 26-degree high wind, but three of them survived. So I guess, you know, planting tomatoes not in a high tunnel, because I know there's a lot of great high tunnel gardeners out there. My Walla Waters and cloches held their own, and I'm feeling pretty good because I have a lot of catch-up to do in the rest of the garden.
Well, what problems do we usually see in the garden in summertime, this next few weeks?
You know, especially this year, we've had the cold, then the extreme hot, then the cold. A lot of us are under, you know, it's been pretty dry and very windy. I mean, I thought it was just my yard, but everybody's told me the winds have been incredible, and that dries things out. So I think our spring gardens are fading. Our summer gardens maybe haven't kicked in, or some are just not doing as well. And I think one of the good things is garden centers really have lots of plants available, not just the leftovers from spring that didn't sell, but also planning for 4th of July celebrations. So you can buy some nice big annuals. I was at a garden center chatting with the owners at Ebert's, and you know, as a horticulturist, we always laugh. We're the last ones to get our gardens in. And they had a great tip. They said, well, what we do is we take our hanging baskets, take off the hooks, and put them in a stand, and we have a great garden all in one. And I'm like, what a great idea. And I've even met gardeners who pop them into the ground. It's a garden in a pot ready to go. So if you're a little late in planting, like me, or if you got things in early and things are starting to fade, it's a great way to take care of it.
You know what? Sorry. I've done just that.
Oh, have you? Okay.
With the hangers. Yeah, I've taken.
Okay, your secrets will keep it safe for you, Larry.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? Every single line is filled. Should we take some calls?
You bet.
Let's go to Jennifer in Oconomowoc first. Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is not really, like, in a garden, but I do have a problem. I've got a few areas in my yard where the ground is sinking in, and I believe it is due to rotting tree roots.
Okay.
Do I need to completely dig all of that out, or can I just put some soil and grass seed over that?
You know, that's a great question. What happens with tree roots and the stump that's left, even if we get a stump grinder to come in, that really helps speed up the process. But it takes years for those roots to decay because they're used to being underground where it's dark and damp. And when we try to plant over the area, what happens is the microorganisms working on breaking down those tree roots also rob some of the nitrogen from the soil temporarily, but eventually gives it all back. So adding some more compost, either compost topsoil mix. Sue has a great garden blend. It's a local company out of Wausau, Wisconsin. But getting a good quality topsoil garden blend in that area to fill in, because it's going to continue to sink. You may even want to create a bit of a raised bed. Are you trying to garden there or grow grass?
Just grow grass.
Okay. So the thing with growing grass, so then you'll want to level it out, and then add a little extra nitrogen. Again, you know me, I'll recommend Milorganite, but the benefit is it's low nitrogen. So if you're trying to push the limit and seed this time of year during hot weather in the summer, it's not going to burn your lawn, and you can do it as you seed, or any low nitrogen, slow-release fertilizer. And you may need to fertilize that area a little more often. So definitely fill it in. It may continue to sink, but the benefit, once you get the grass growing, you can add a little bit of soil over that crown of the grass and kind of keep working on leveling it. So add some soil to level it out, incorporate some Milorganite or, you know, a low nitrogen fertilizer in there when you seed, and then just be prepared. You may get pale green grass for a while. You may need to fertilize that portion more often than the rest of your lawn.
There you go.
My husband will be so happy. Thank you.
All right. Thanks
so much. Work for him to do.
Oh, man. Terry and Amaro, your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hi. My question is more about my potted plants and my herbs, basil and, you know, rosemary and those kinds of things. I'm all confused as to what I'm supposed to be feeding them, fish emulsion, and is that all that and a piece of cake, or is that, you know, myth? The difference between food and fertilizer, I'm not sure what to put in there.
You know, that's a really good question. And fertilizing can be as difficult as we all professionals want to make it for gardeners to understand. And I think, first of all, is picking a fertilizer you're comfortable with. I like to use a low nitrogen slow release because you can always add more. It's hard to take it away. You know, you have to leach out the soil. Chemical fertilizers are in a form that are readily available. Organic fertilizers tend to be very low in nutrients, and they're released by weather. Depends on the formulation. If it's an organic, they're released by microorganisms working on them in the weather. And so it's a slower process. But it feeds the plants like we should be eating, small meals throughout the season versus, you know, three big meals a day. Not that I'm good at that, but hopefully for my plants I'm better.
Right.
So I like to use a low nitrogen slow release because it's forgiving. You know, I choose Milorganite. You may want to use fish emulsion. Just be careful if they're animals. Sometimes people will complain cats will dig into their pots. But okay. Or, you know, another organic if you prefer an organic. But if you do a quick release, then you're going to do fertilizing every couple of weeks. But I'd cut it to about half. You can always, again, increase it if need be.
Okay.
The other thing about slow-release fertilizers, whichever brand you pick, is they promote slow, steady growth that's less water-hungry, so it makes your plants more drought-tolerant, and also less susceptible to insects and diseases because that lush, succulent growth tends to be more appealing to bugs. They like it. It's tastier. And diseases tend to infest it more readily. So another benefit of going with a low nitrogen, slow release, and then let your plants be the guide. I know that's something you hate to hear, but, you know, if they're not giving you the performance, then maybe you need to give them a little more nudge.
Okay.
But also watch the weather. I mean, you know, it's been crazy, so keep weather in mind as you're deciding on your fertilization program as well.
There you go.
You know, and I'm remembering I do have some Milorganite in my garage. So for the potted plants, do I just sprinkle that and then water it in, or do I put it in the water, or?
Sprinkle it on the soil surface, and the microorganisms will take it down. Some people like to work it in a little bit.
Oh.
It has that earthy smell, so some helps repel animals to some extent, as gardeners tell me.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't like the smell, just kind of lightly work it in, and then when you water, it's good
there
to go.
There it is, yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your question.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Dave in West Bend, it is your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hey, hi, Larry. Hi, Melinda. Thank you for taking my call. Larry's show has prompted me to try straw bale gardening, and so I did that a couple months ago. Conditioned the bales according to, I think it was the University of Minnesota's publication, and you know, used like heavy nitrogen to get the microorganisms to start, you know, breaking down everything. But anyhow, so I planted my straw bales. I've got tomatoes and peppers that look great, but on one of my bales I've got broccoli, and they came up, or they, you know, they were little plants, and they grew pretty well. I've actually got some heads, but now the leaves are like whitish, and I thought maybe there wasn't enough water, but this publication also had led me to put on like a half a cup of fertilizer once a week, and I'm wondering if maybe I'm over-fertilizing?
I tend to be on the side of, believe it or not, very minimal fertilizing. White leaves can be scorch, drought. I'll tell you, I was gone for just 2 days. I watered heavily in the morning I left, came back on the second day, and stuff was scorched. It was that, you know, 90 degrees, full sun. Broccoli is a cool weather plant, so it likes it cool. It will survive our summers. So, one, I would check with the moisture, and then I'd also watch the fertilizing, especially if you're doing a, are they recommending a high, I haven't looked at that publication for a while, high nitrogen or quick-release fertilizer?
I don't recall, but it was just like the fertilizer I'm using is for plants and flowers, vegetable plants and flowers, and so like maybe it's about a 10-10-8 or something like that.
10-10-8 would be, 10-10-8 would be fine if it's a slow release. The nitrogen, the high nitrogen fertilizer you use in the beginning to start the bales and get them going,
Then
as the plants are, you know, growing along, then you switch over to something that's like a 10-10-10.
Right. Okay. So maybe it's just a scorched. Because we've had some pretty hot days in West Bend, and they are out in the sunshine, so they're getting a decent amount of sun. So okay, I guess I'll just water the heck out of them.
Yeah, and one of the things with scorch, I'm glad you brought it up, because one of the other challenges with scorch is when we have windy or very hot days, even if there's enough water in the soil, sometimes the plants aren't able to pull it up as quickly as they're losing it. You know, you see that in hostas that are pushed into a little more sun or even during hot temperatures. So, yeah, definitely watch the moisture, and if you're using, as Larry mentioned, that 10% or a low nitrogen fertilizer, it's probably not that. He's the expert. I'm a 3-year veteran who is retired from straw bale gardening. I had my year of success. I'm good.
There we go.
So I'll defer to Larry.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, my straw bale garden looks pretty good. Everything is going great, but you're right about the water. I skipped a day here and during one of those hot periods, and my peppers and everybody looked weepy and kind of droopy.
You know, I always quote you, Larry, when I'm asked about straw bale. I talk about my 3 years of experience, my final success, and I said for me it was putting soaker hoses and timers on because otherwise you get busy, you know, I'm good at modern my containers, and I had to put it right by my house, right by the faucet, where I'd walk by it and remember. So it's an exciting way to have a container, potting mix, and plants all in one. And I know gardeners are having a lot of fun with it, and obviously you are too.
Yeah, it's been a blast, actually. I've really enjoyed it. Oh, man. Well, James in Fall Creek has something different for us, I believe. James, hi. Thanks for calling.
And thank you. Thank you very much. My question is herbicides and grapes. I recognize that grapes are very susceptible to herbicides, but my reference, I do have a reference that references 2,4-D, which leaves a residue in the ground. Recognizing that glycosulfate or Roundup, the drift will harm the grapes, I have a weed problem and would like to use Roundup because I feel that the residue is not going to last very long.
Mm-hmm. How large an area do you have? How many grape vines?
I have 200 feet of 200 arbor, feet. And I presently have 40 grape plants.
Okay.
Right. Most of the references that I've read also and seen is it's mostly the broadleaf weed killers. You're right. Roundup typically breaks down when it hits the soil and is not available. I was just trying to look at a thesis here because have you heard or seen anything on, I'm always nervous about Roundup near anything that I want to be sure to eat and
right.
carefully. I think if you could wipe it on the plants versus spray it on, so it's taken through the leaves and not applied to the soil, I've had some people tell me they've seen issues where the Roundup has puddled on the soil and come in contact with the plant, not necessarily grapes, but plants, in general. I'm just feeling like I want to pass on this one, and I'm really sorry. When's our fruit expert back on?
I'll have to check. Jill will look that up and let us know. I am not sure. One of the things you could do, James, is, although it's getting a little old now, it's still pretty relevant. It's an extension publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, which still has a lot of great information on it. And you might find something in there, in that publication.
Yeah.
You can go to the Learning Store, it's learningstore.uwex.edu. But if you just type UW Extension Learning Store, it'll pop up. And look at the publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin.
And that's an excellent one for anybody that's getting started. You know, I'm kind of doing a quick search. I'm cheating here on the Internet while we're chatting. And everything I'm finding is referencing the broadleaf weed killers. I'm really not finding anything on the, you know, the total vegetation killers with glyphosate as the active ingredient. So it sounds like you found the same references I did, too. But everything I'm seeing is talking mostly about 2,4-D or the other broadleaf weeds like triclopyr and those, and nothing's really talking about the total vegetation killers. I get it. The weeds did great in my garden this year, and I'll tell you, I've got raspberries and quackgrass doing quite well together. So I hear you. I'm about ready to cut everything back and start over. But I don't think it's in that publication, but it's an excellent publication. Tune in when the grape expert is, you know, the fruit specialist does on. And if you do try, I would try far away and wiping it on the plants or restricting your spraying and making sure you stay away from those grapes.
Yep.
But I would proceed cautiously.
Yes. And thanks for calling, James. Appreciate your call. Melinda Myers, our guest today, nationally known gardening expert with over 20 books written. Our guest on Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer. Taking a look at your garden today here on Garden Talk, Larry Mueller with my guest Melinda Myers. And you can join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's take another call. Ramona in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Ramona.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a limited space to garden, so I started playing around with square foot gardening and did the Mel's mix this year.
Okay.
And I put pepper plants in, beets, tomatoes, and beans. My beets never came up. My peppers, within the last couple of days, lost all their leaves. The tomatoes are doing well. The beans are doing okay, but some of them, the leaves are drying up and falling off. So is it overwatering or?
It could, you know, this is always the, it could be over or could be not enough watering. One of the things, I've read Mel's first book, and I know he slightly changed his mix, but his soil mixes tend to be very well drained, a little bit more so than a lot of our soils, especially in Milwaukee where we have a lot of clay. What I would suggest doing is always watering thoroughly and then digging down a couple of inches. And when it's feeling crumbly but still slightly moist, especially if you've amended it highly, you want it, once it dries, especially if you've used peat moss as your amendment, it tends to get hard and it's hard to re-wet. Too much or not enough water can cause and describe the problems the symptoms that you've described. So I would monitor your watering. And when we first plant, we need to water often. right, to keep the root ball moist. And then we back it up until the seeds sprout and the roots start to work in. And then we slowly, gradually break it down, you know, instead of every night or every other day, once a week except in this heat, or maybe twice a week in fast-draining soils. So it could be overwatering. Peppers losing their leaves. I'm assuming you're in a pretty sheltered location. You're in the city.
Well, yeah, but it's on the south side of a building, and so it gets sun all day long and hot.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you mulch your soil? Is the soil mulched at all?
No, I did not.
You know, one of the things, I always had leaves when I lived in the city. I don't know where they came from, but I always had lots of leaves coming in my yard. And I shred them with my mower and use those as mulch. They're a great mulch, and they're free. Evergreen needles. That'll help conserve the moisture. It will also help keep the soil cool. And the other thing you might want to do with the beets, and this works if you're doing a summer crop of lettuce or trying to do a summer planting for fall harvest, is prep the soil, plant the seeds, moisten, and cover with like a little strip of wood, like a lath, and then just kind of monitor it. That'll keep the soil moist and cool, and then as soon as you see sprouting, take that off. It just seems to work as a mulch, but it's one you can remove easy as soon as those seeds sprout. And I've had really good luck with carrots that tend to blow away because you plant them so shallow, or lettuce. You might want to try that with your beets.
Okay. All righty. Okay, thank you.
Okay, good luck.
Can I start over with the peppers?
You know, I was just, I put some in and they've been wind whipped, and I just saw a few really nice looking ones on sale. I was thinking about doing the same thing.
Okay. All right, I'll start over with the peppers and see if there's any left out
there. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Speaking of starting over, John has got some soccer fields that are all weeds now and wants to get rid of the weeds and plant grass and hopefully have something going by fall. Any chance of that?
Ooh. Well, it's very difficult because of the warm soil. The grass sprouts quickly, but it's really hard for it to get established. And, you know, I've had some luck where we turned, years ago, community gardens, we had to close down some areas and move them, and we put them in grass, and we seeded the middle of June, and nobody watered, and we lucked out. But I bet there were a ton of weeds in that area. So the problem is the weeds thrive in the heat. You're going to be out time, the effort, and the seed, and the water. I mean, watering is going to be key, so you also need to be able to water to get the grass to grow and outcompete the weeds. You know, I think you need to decide, if you go out and kill the weeds, more weeds will probably come in unless you overseed those areas and water. So there's always a chance, but you're really going to have to put a lot of work in. And your chance of success is going to be lower now than if you started in August to try to build up the turf for spring. But obviously you're trying to get ready for soccer season. So
there we go.
You might want to try overseeding. If you've got enough area, at least you'll still have some grass in place. If you've got at least 40%, you might try overseeding. That might be one way to kind of hedge your bet a little bit.
That's a good idea. Barbara and De Pere, your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm having a problem with my beds of phlox. This is the third year, and they come in wonderfully. They look good and healthy. And then within weeks, the bottom leaves start turning yellow. And they turn brown and crumble up, shrivel all up. And it works its way up the plant.
It sounds like powdery mildew, and garden phlox are very susceptible, and sometimes we don't notice the powdery substance because the leaves seem to turn yellow right away. There are some phlox plant bugs, but you typically see spotting, not so much the yellowing. The problem with phlox or with powdery mildew is, you know, they're fine. They'll survive. They just look ugly. And the reason we garden is for beauty as well as things to eat and, you know, working with nature. So a couple of options. You may want to replace them with mildew-resistant phlox. Now, even those that are resistant in a bad mildew year, you know, if the weather conditions are right, you'll still see some mildew. You may want to spray. The problem is, at the first sign, you need to repeat that spray every 10 to 14 days, depending on the product you're using. And there are some eco-friendly products like Neem, N as in Nancy, E-E-M as in Mary, that are labeled for controlling mildew.
What was that name?
And Neem, N as in Nancy, E-E-M as in Mary. But you want to make sure you get the formula for fungicide. There's one that controls insects and mites and a different formulation that controls diseases.
Okay.
Cornell University found that baking soda was also effective. You'll see different rates, but, you know, a tablespoon of baking soda with a teaspoon of either insecticidal soap or horticulture oil acts as a spreader sticker in a gallon of water. Test a leaf or two before you spray. Then you need to repeat that weekly. Some things you can do, and you could still get in there and thin it out, but in the spring, removing about a fourth of the stems right back to ground level so you have better light penetration and airflow, making sure the plants have plenty of space so they get as much light as possible. I kind of take the low-maintenance approach, so I put something a little bit shorter in front of it to mask the ugly leaves.
Oh, that's clever.
So I don't have to spray. I still get to keep the phlox I love, and I don't have to look at the ugliness, but I get to enjoy the beautiful flowers.
Oh,
and
great.
And I'm lazy. So.
Oh, that's my problem, too.
So just cover the problem, and they'll be back next year, and that's a good way to deal with it.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Is there any point to, you know, cleaning out the garden at the end of the year?
You know, good point. Powdery mildew, there are many different strains, but if you've had a good point, if you've had disease problems, you know, I leave things stand for winter unless they've had an insect or a disease problem. So cleaning it up, cutting it back to the ground, getting rid of it, don't compost it. Excellent suggestion, Larry. Good way to reduce the spores that will infect plants next year.
Clarence in Watertown has something for us. Hi, Clarence. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'm actually hauling manure at this moment. Let me shut the tractor off. I've got a roadside patch of asparagus that we harvested earlier and is now, you let it go to seed.
Right.
What should we do, if anything, to get it, you know, keep it healthy through the summer and hopefully get it to yield again next year?
You know, one of the things, isn't it amazing? We put all this energy and effort in our asparagus beds, and some of the best asparagus is grown on the roadside.
Yeah.
Well, it's in a field side, you know, roadside area, and I'm afraid that all the campers that go by here, they're kind of pilfering it.
Oh, but, That would be one step, is to try to, and I don't know how you do that. Luckily, usually the grasses and the weeds around it kind of mask it once, you know, the picking season is over. You know, keeping the weeds down in and around that planting, you know, will also help because it reduces the competition. You know, if there's we usually do our fertilization earlier in the season if we need any. So, you know, you could do a little organic fertilizer, manure, some aged manure, just a little bit of organic fertilizer. Wouldn't hurt to even do it now. You wouldn't want to do it after August 1st. But mainly if you can keep the weeds away.
All right.
Asparagus, once established, is pretty drought tolerant. Now extended droughts, dumping a little water, good thorough watering in those areas wouldn't hurt either. But usually pretty drought tolerant, usually low maintenance. Weed competition's a big one. And then, you know, just a little fertilizer will really keep it going.
All right.
If we harvest it, you know, as they start to come up, you don't want to let the stalks get away from you. Is that right?
Well, once they do, they don't taste as good. So, you know, regular harvesting, you do that. And the reason then we let them go, you know, to form the nice little leaves, the airy leaves, is to put the energy back in. So it doesn't really hurt the plant. Well, once it starts doing that, energy is going into the leaves instead of producing more stalks. So it just hurts productivity.
All right.
Basically the opposite of alfalfa.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Clarence.
Thanks so much. Enjoy.
Louise in Milwaukee, thank you for calling.
Yes, I have a couple poppies that I've had on the west side of our house for, well, probably 10 years. They have gradually become gorgeous plants, and this year they started out the same way. and the buds looked promising. And as it moved into bloom, some of the leaves started dying, some of the buds knotted, and although we had about three orange poppies and about four pink ones, basically the plants look horrible. And leaves have died back, and normally at this time, there's some leaves that are okay, not many, but normally at this time of year, yes, some of the leaves die back, but it just doesn't seem like the crash that I'm experiencing this year.
So when you're not seeing any, you're seeing drying back, but not spotting or holes or anything like that. It's more like it's when it goes dormant for the summer, that kind of look?
But it seems premature to me this year. The fact that the buds knotted and spoiled concerned me.
Yeah. One of the things, and I know this always sounds, but looking at even out in my garden and other gardens and talking to some others who are managing, some things are really tolerating this crazy fluctuation of temperature. You know, I kind of went out and looked at everything that was frost damaged after 26 degrees, and I'm amazed at what came back. And then looking at the stress on the plants from the heat, you know, we've had some pretty high temperatures very early in the season. And that's what I'm thinking with your poppies, is they're just responding to these extremely high temperatures we've had, which are really not typical for us. And it just may be shutting down because it can't keep up. As I mentioned, you know, with scorch and things, even if you've got enough water in there, can the plants pull it up as fast as they're losing it? I would keep monitoring soil temperature. Be careful not to overdo it. And being on the west side, too, where you're getting that pounding sun, which normally is okay, but we've had some pretty toasty days in June. Just keep an eye on it. It doesn't sound like a typical disease problem. It sounds more like a response to the weather.
Okay. I'm hoping they come back glorious next year.
And it'll be a better growing season, right? Isn't that what we all say?
That's what we can hope. Oh, thanks a lot for calling, Louise. Appreciate your call.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's turn to Lee in Green Bay next. Lee, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I was wondering if Melinda is aware or she knows of a product on the market that's been around since the 1950s. I've been using it for years. It's a liquid plant food out of Door County. It's called Follett's Watch Us Grow. Excellent for flowers, vegetables, container. You can use it in your beds. It's just a really good product. Right out of Egg Harbor.
Is it a fish product? Is it a fish product?
No. Oh. You use 2 tablespoons to a gallon of water for outdoor plants and 1 tablespoon... to a gallon of water for indoor plants. And I don't know what his recipe is. It's kind of his grandpa developed it. And now his grandpa has since passed away, and the grandson is, from what I understand, is running it. And it's just called Follett's Watch Us Grow. Excellent, excellent plant food. It's a triple egg balance.
Okay. Well, thank you. I knew there were some fish fertilizers coming out of Door County maybe 30 years ago, but I am not familiar with this one, so thank you.
Follett's Watch Us Grow. There we go. Thanks, Lee. Appreciate your call. We had, let's see, what do we got here? Quite a few emails. We have Karen in Madison emailed to say her knockout roses were doing well until a few weeks ago when the proximal leaves were suddenly gone. She treated with 7, but wants to know if she should prune them.
I would not. You know, they'll put out new leaves unless you've got dieback or death. Rose slugs I've been getting calls and questions on, and those are really sawflies. They're worm-like insects that are somewhat translucent, and they eat the upper surface of the leaf, skeletonizing it, and you end up, and they turn brown. I'll tell you, I have more rabbits in my yard than I've ever had.
I have too.
Really? Where are the predators, the hawks and owls? I'm like, come on, you know, love them, but the bunnies are eating too much. So when I see whole things missing, I think of animals. I found Japanese beetles on my cosmos a couple days ago already. So, you know, the bugs are doing fine with this warm weather. I think it's speeding things up. So I would just let them resprout, kind of keep an eye on it. If it was rose slugs, they'll leaf out again. It just looks awful. And often by the time we see the damage, they're gone. You use 7, that would take care of them. So
There you go.
Just wait, which is the hardest thing for gardeners to do.
On Facebook, Chris posted to say that she has timers set up to water her newly planted trees and shrubs while she's on vacation. How often should she water and for how long? She does have someone overseeing the process.
You know, one of the things you'll want to do before you leave, and this is a good idea for anyone doing any kind of automated watering when they're out of town, is to turn on your system, whether it's full blast or halfway, and then monitor and see how long it takes for that water to soak down and really moisten. For trees and shrubs, we're talking about the top 8 inches of soil. That's where the majority of the roots are. If you're in clay soil, typically, and they're mulched, typically once a week or even every 10 days, but given the heat, maybe once a week. For sandier soils, twice a week, we usually say an inch once a week, a half an inch. But if you're using a soaker hose, you may need to dig down or set a couple tins in to see, you know, underneath to see how long it takes. So then you could set that, and before you go, monitor how quickly is it drying out. You know, so check the soil in, dig down about 6 inches. Is it dry in 5 days? And that's how often you should water. It's just so hard because the growing conditions throughout your yard are somewhat different. Yours are different than mine. Our soils are different. So
it rains or not?
Well, that's another good point, not even thinking about that. So if you do have someone monitoring it, make sure they know how to operate that system so they can turn off the timer if need be.
John, that's very good points. John in Dubuque, Iowa, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Okay. I have a stand of daylilies behind my house that are just beautiful, but they're being overtaken by thistle, nettles, and a creeping vine type thing that sticks to your ankles and your clothes and everything. And I was wondering, is there anything I could apply to kill them and not kill the daylilies?
What an invasion.
Oh, I know. And I think they're called Sticky Willy or something like that. I have that. I never had it until I moved here. And they grab you and they go with you. Here's the problem. Anything that'll kill these will also has the potential to damage your daylilies. So a couple things you can do. If you can protect your daylilies and then treat the weeds with a total vegetation killer like a Roundup, making sure it doesn't hit your daylilies. So for smaller plants, like a milk jug works, a piece of poster board wrapped around the plant, I like to wipe on or wick on the Roundup. I don't like to do the glove thing. I just worry that I'll get it on me. But just a sponge brush and wipe it on. But make sure those wet leaves don't hit your daylilies. I've been struggling with the same kind of issue. Weeded out this garden, and, you know, 2 weeks later, it's infiltrated again. And I'm going to have to get back and pull some, spot treat some, and it's kind of a combination of the two. So you want to, you know, be very careful around your daylilies. The products absorb, the broadleaf weed killer, the total vegetation killers like Roundup that contain glyphosate are absorbed through the leaves and translocated into the roots. So that's the benefit. Not into the daylilies, but if it touches the daylilies, it can damage or kill them. So you just need to protect the daylilies if you're going to use a product like that.
Yeah, I pull the weeds out of my daylily bed and early on, and then I mulch them pretty heavily, and I've had pretty good luck. I mean, you know, you still get weeds coming through, but then it's a lot easier to pull a few here and there.
And, you know, they've done research, and they found that mulching is just as effective as a pre-emergent on a lot of those annual weeds. And if you get out there early, and Larry's got the ticket, if you get out there early,
yeah.
I didn't this year either, but if you get out there early, the smaller weeds are easier. After a rain or, we're in a dry spell, then run the sprinkler so those weeds will pull up a lot easier than when the ground is hard and you're more likely to get the roots. But good point, Larry. You want to, after you get rid of those weeds, mulch. And, yes. If you're frustrated, it's a good day to go pull some weeds, I guess.
There you go. Thanks a lot, John. Melinda Myers, our guest today, nationally known gardening expert, author of over 20 gardening books. We're going to talk with her about what she's got coming up. She's always has a number of appearances, and we'll talk with her about that and answer your questions here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. taking a look at your garden today here on Garden Talk with Melinda Myers. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll go right back to the phones now and see what's on Sue's mind from Ashapan. Sue, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a yard full of anthills. And I'd really like to make it, you know, more more nice to spend time there.
Are these big, large anthills?
They're not. Well, it, you know what? They're all, like, really underground. So, you know, you just see, like, the dirt, but even grass is, like, kind of grown over some of them.
Like a pie plate size with the dirt?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and I heard you talking about this, was it last week?
Yeah, it might have been last week.
Yeah, here, I have those same things. And my, and this, and the ants, boy, love me when I'm in the garden. I have more ant bites than anything else when I'm gardening. I kind of have the, if they're not disturbing the plant roots and I can live with them, I leave them. Otherwise, and I think you were giving great advice last week, Larry, that you really need to take care of the queen. Otherwise, you kill them, you put a product down labeled for ant control, but if you don't get the queen, they just move her over somewhere else and you got another one going. This dry weather has been great for them. They like it. They seem to be multiplying. I seem to have more anthills than ever. So if you use a product labeled for, I think permethrin is probably the product that's out there. There are some borax-based products on the market, a little hard to find. But again, taking a rod is, Larry, if you heard Larry a couple weeks ago or last week mentioned putting a rod down into, you know, good 8 or 10, 12 inches deep to put the product in to try to get the queen to take care of her. You know, you may want to pick and choose your areas that you want to treat. Just say, I'll live with them over here. I can't live with them here. And it'll make you less crazy, and it'll be a little easier to manage.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Larry.
Okay.
Okay, she's, I didn't convince her, Larry.
Oh, boy. I've got one anthill, one, you know, sort of pie plate size, and it's off to the side, so I, you know what, let them be.
Yeah, you know, but when they start disturbing the roots of your plants in the garden or, you know, if it's an area, you know, your kids are sitting and playing, but then you got to worry about your kids, too. So read and follow label directions. You know, I know everybody out there knows that, but I can't emphasize that enough.
Let's turn to Julie in Eau Claire next. Hi, Julie.
Hi, and to the guy who, with all the weeds in his daylilies, he might want to buy himself at a farm supply store an old-fashioned corn knife and cut them off real low. It's, you can do that pretty quick.
You know, that's a good, having the right tool. I use a weed knife, and it's amazing how many, thank you. It's amazing how fast you can really get going, especially if the soil's moist.
And like my dad put a long handle on ours, like for nettles, so you don't have to get near them. So.
Oh, see, that's where the best garden tools come from, are from gardeners.
There you go.
My question is about milorganite. What do you think of it as an all-around fertilizer, and is it true, I've tried it, and I still see a deer in the garden. You have to put it down more. It's supposed to keep deer away. I've had a couple people swear by it, but what do you know about that?
Yeah, well, I am their spokesperson, so I want to disclose, but I was a fan before I started working formally with them. So I like it because I can use it on everything. So I only have to have one product, and it's slow release. It's the source of nitrogen is organic. It's got some chelated iron, and it won't, it's goof-proof, and not that I ever recommend over-fertilizing, because we shouldn't, and I don't recommend fertilizing unless you need to, but sometimes you are in the middle of fertilizing. I was doing my pots, and I was like, did I fertilize that? I don't know if I fertilized that. I put some down. I think a couple got a double dose, but it didn't hurt anything. It's not labeled for repelling deer and rabbits, but gardeners do share that they do have that success, and you'll see some research on their website done by Rutgers or Cornell or some university out in the Northeast where they found some success. Now, I had to laugh. I talked to a couple of people that said, well, I think the Wisconsin deer are more used to it, so it doesn't work as well as the ones out of state. You do have to repeat, you know, because that smell kind of dissipates. And you don't want to put too much. A friend of mine, her husband had heard this, and he put a 2-inch layer of Milorganite around the house.
No.
Yeah. She said, it repelled me, hon. I'll come back after you deal with it. So a little bit goes a long way, and regular applications will be a better way of getting rid of them. But if there's enough deer and they're hungry enough, you know,
yeah,
there's no repellent that's going to really work well. A couple of things with deer is, you know, if you start before they start feeding, you always have better success. But, you know, yesterday for the first time I had a deer standing in my backyard. They're usually in the woods chewing on my buckeye plant. And I'm thinking, I'm out there yelling at it and it's looking at me like, okay, whatever, and kept eating. You know, so repellents before they start feeding. Scare tactics, well, only work if, you know, there's not that noise or scent of humans around. Fencing, not always practical for a lot of us. And some people have had good luck with fishing line, like a foot above and 3 feet above, to keep them out, or fencing smaller areas. But, yeah, you can try the Milorganite. Gardeners do tell me they have good success. But anything you do, you always need to monitor and adjust based on how many deer, where they're eating, what they seem to be favoring, and how hungry they are. Oh, and the last one that I've had heard great things is the Scarecrow. There's another product similar to sprinkler that's motion sensitive. So the deer walk by, it turns on the sprinkler, and it sprays them with water. And because it's an element of surprise, I've had people tell me they've had good success with that as well.
I have my good friend Scott Craven's got a huge vegetable garden, and he never has deer because he has a big fence. All the way around. No deer for him. Other things get through, but not the deer.
Yeah, I need to talk to him about those ground squirrels that are, you know, and I even put hardware cloth down 2 feet, but they've, you know, they're getting in those little areas I'm trying to secure. It's a battle, and I'm losing that one.
Oh, boy. Katie in Lake Geneva, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi. I had a question. I have a small section of lawn that's fenced in for my dog, and of course it has many brown spots, and one of my friends mentioned putting in micro clover, and I wondered what you might know about that.
Micro clover for a lawn?
I know that a lot of people are using, going to the smaller scale clovers for lawns, a couple of reasons. One, to support the pollinators. Two, they tend to be tougher and more drought tolerant, as evidenced by the fact they thrive in our lawns. Usually if you have a lot of clover that you consider weed in your lawn, it's a nitrogen, you know, fertilization issue. So they fix nitrogen, so they're a low maintenance. I'm not sure how resistant they are to dog urine, because dog urine is basically like a fertilizer burn. You know, but I know a lot of people are doing clover lawns for environmental issues, low maintenance issues. You know, it was put in our grass mixes as a nurse crop years ago.
Sure, back in the 50s.
Yeah, and so it does a lot of good things. I don't know how resistant it would be to dog urine, though. So if you go that route, you know, I haven't seen anything related to how it responds to dog urine. I do see it's tough. It wears well. So it might help in that aspect. You know, watering, and I know this isn't practical, following your dog around with the watering can to wash that urine through the grass or through the soil helps reduce the burn potential. But how practical is that? I don't know.
Yeah. Patricia McConnell had great advice on that.
Oh,
she said, find an area in the corner of your lawn or area, and then teach the dog just to go there.
You know, we did, for Melinda's Garden Moments, and it's still on my website, we did an area for friends' dogs to do exactly that. We used pea gravel, land, and apparently I'm a cat person. I love dogs. Just can't, you know.
Yeah.
They'd be very unruly if I was responsible. But we did an area, and then we landscaped around it so that, again, getting the dog, whether it's just in your lawn, in grass, or whatever, good suggestion. So if you can, that's an easy way to manage, an easier way maybe to manage it.
And let's turn to Dan in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, what's on your mind, Dan?
Well, last night I was at one of the big box stores, and I was able to buy one of those little small greenhouses that had the soil already in it. I'm clearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, am I able to plant, you know, like the cold weather vegetables, like lettuce and arugula and, you know, some of the spinach. Can I plant those now in there and then transplant them into the garden for the fall?
And you don't want to plant them directly in the garden because you want to save space?
Well, no, I just wanted to...
He just wants to try starting them in that medium and then transplant.
If you want to, and when you were saying greenhouse, I was picturing one of the plastic things. What I would do is you could start them in flats and pots. Because it's so warm, you really wouldn't need that benefit of the greenhouse. When I'm thinking greenhouse, I'm thinking the cover and that type of thing. Are you thinking of starting them indoors and transplanting them outside then?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I've got a grow light and everything.
Okay.
Okay, and you don't want to do it outside, thinking more control over the environment indoors, that type of thing?
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, definitely. I had a friend who taught me a lot about gardening, and he grew 5 crops of lettuce in Wisconsin every year, and he would start them indoors under grow lights, and he'd have transplants all throughout the season. So I just wanted to understand why you wanted to start it inside instead of outside. So, yeah, you could start things outdoors, but you're right. Indoors you have more control, not mm-hmm. going to dry out as fast. You control the temperature better and sometimes easier to water.
Yep, it is sometimes easier to water. Oh, boy. Melinda Myers, our guest, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio's Garden Talk. Thanks so much for joining us here for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mealer with my guest, Melinda Myers. Always great to have Melinda come by and visit with us, and certainly happy to have you listening in. Join in at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. Melinda, you have a number of events coming up in July and even into August.
You bet. I love this time of year because I get to meet with gardeners and lots of your fans out there, Larry. They okay. love you. And we get to talk about how well our gardens are doing and then some of the challenges. So thanks to American Transmission Company, I'm going to be at the Wauwatosa Garden Tour on July 9th in Wauwatosa at the Neyland Walker Home from 10 to 1, answering questions. And then you get to go tour all these beautiful gardens in Wauwatosa and get lots of good ideas. So that's July 9th. And then on July 30th, I'll be at the Shorewood Garden Tour, and I'll be at the Eastwood Condominium on Oakland. You can get all this on my website as well, but I'll be there from 10 to 1 as well, answering questions. And again, you get a chance to see a lot of the gardens on the east side of Milwaukee, so that's a lot of fun. And then State Fair is always a good time. I'm there every day at the fair, speaking twice a day at We Energy Energy Park, and State Fair starts August 4th and ends the 14th, and I'll be there twice a day, every day. And then I end the first day of fair, I go to Ebert's Greenhouse Village in Exonia for Ladies' Night. Sorry, guys, I'll talk to you in the parking lot, but the ladies get first dibs. And it's a lot of fun. I was there last year, and so it was a great way to end the first day of fair by, you know, starting off with cream puffs and potato Wisconsin potatoes, and ending with a little glass of wine and plant talk at Ebert's Greenhouse Village.
So it sounds wonderful.
A lot of fun. Are you going to be at State Fair this year at all?
I am not. I have to be out of town, so for the first time in I can't remember when, I won't be there, but next year.
Okay.
Sure.
Well, we'll meet over a cream puff or a potato, something like that.
That sounds like a plan. What about your site now, your website, Melinda?
You bet. I've got video and audio tips. We've got frequently asked questions. And so you can post a question. Please be patient. Dawn, who works with me, if she can't answer it, passes it on to me. And so we try to keep up, but we're outnumbered. So please bear with me. But we're always adding new information every week, new tips, new video, new pictures. And my e-newsletter is free. And mm-hmm. if you sign up, or if you're already signed up, you'll be entered for a chance to win a $500 gift certificate from Gardener Supply. I am not above bribery to get people to
that's
listen
very
to
cool.
me. So, yeah, and we'll have another one coming out next week. And anyone who's already a member knows I don't annoy you. I struggle to get them out once a month. So They come out about once a month, maybe twice a month, but if there's anything we're not doing for you on the website, let us know. We'll try to see if we can make it work.
There we go. Well, Gabby in Madison has something for us next. Let's go there. Gabby, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks.
Hi, Gabby.
My phone call is actually in regards to your previous caller about the dog urine in her lawn.
Yep.
Okay.
Actually, I've tried this before and I've used it, and as a vet tech, I know it's safe for your animal, but adding tomato juice to their water helps neutralize the pH of their urine, and you don't find the urine spots in your, it doesn't scald the lawn.
So now how much, I've heard this before, how much do you put in the water?
You know, I honestly cannot remember how much I used, but if you have a large water dish, I think I just added a whole can of tomato juice to it. It definitely looks like just tomato juice by the time you're done adding it in.
And the dog drinks it okay?
Yeah, I mean, I've never, well, I guess maybe some dogs would be picky, but I've never had any problems with it.
Dogs in general aren't too picky when it comes
okay.
to
okay.
Yeah.
But I've heard that before, and I don't have a dog, so I have not experimented. But I'm glad to know it's working, has worked for you, Gabby.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of owners struggle with, you know, there's different, like, brick blocks you can place to help the dogs go to a specific spot to urinate.
Yep.
And I know a lot of people have problems with that because when they got to go, they got to go. But
well, we'll try it. We'll try some tomato juice in the water. Thank you so much for calling. You've heard that before?
I have.
Melinda?
And I also heard somebody was telling me, talk to your vet, that they called it a green pill, something that a vet, I don't know. Again, I have unruly cats, so...
Yeah.
And so I always defer to the vets, but I have heard of that also, and I haven't talked to anyone that other than this kind of hey, I did it and it worked for me. So
there we go. Well, Julie in Mozanie, you are next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. My question is, I have Asiatic lilies, and I have a red bug. Seems to eat the leaves, and if it comes from the ground, whatever, and it's been in the last few years, we've had that.
And you're in the Wausau area?
Yes, I am.
Okay. This is the red lily leaf beetle, and for some reason, it seems to be a problem at this point only in Wausau, the Wausau area, and they're not sure why. There's a great publication on it, through UW Extension, if you do UW Extension lily leaf beetle, if you want to hand pick and knock the adults into a can of soapy water, we're really concerned about the impact that this beetle not only has on our Asiatic lilies, but any native members of the lily family. They'll also go after fritillarias as well. And so controlling the adult, whether you hand pick it or if you decide to use some kind of insecticide labeled for that, the adults, they lay their eggs by members of the true lily family, and then they sprout. You'll see the eggs on the leaf. There's some great pictures, though. You don't need to see them because you obviously have them in your garden.
Yeah.
It has been a problem just since, I think it was 2014, the summer of 2014 they were first found. And for some reason, the only complaints we're getting are from Wausau. If you find them in other areas, they'd really like to know. You know, the Department of Agriculture, DADCAP, would really like to know if there's spottings elsewhere, because they're hoping if all of you can keep them under control, we can keep them kind of isolated and eventually, you know, maybe get rid of them, so or at least contain them to that area.
Any insecticide you recommend?
Permethrin is labeled for it. If you want to do something organic, neem, N-E-E-M is a Mary, insecticidal soap. If you hit them with the insecticidal soap, the perm permethrin is a synthetic version of pyrethrin, which one of the reasons I like it is it has a small amount of active ingredient. They've been able to isolate it. Means you need to follow the label directions carefully, which you should always do anyway. But those are some. If you go to UW Extension and if you know do UW Extension lily leaf beetle, there's a couple of good articles put out by the Extension Service that give a lot of detail.
There you go.
And for anyone else that's out of the Wausau area, if you find them, we definitely let Extension or DADCAP know because they're trying to track this one.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much
well,
for calling.
Good luck. I'm sorry to hear that. I had someone visit me just a week ago and bring some samples, and she's in your neck of the woods too. So said they are pretty devastating. So
well, good luck. Thanks for calling. Dot in Manitowoc up next. Hi, Dot.
Good afternoon. Pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah. When I mix my granulated fertilizer with water, how long does it keep its strength? Perhaps I would walk away from the container for maybe an hour or two. Does it lose its strength?
You know, the one depending on the formulation, if it's a fertilizer meant to be mixed with water, you may need to re-agitate.
Okay.
To make sure nothing's settled out.
Okay.
And try to keep it out of the sunlight. One of the things with liquids, pesticides and fertilizers, if they're exposed to sunlight, that tends to degrade, probably not as quick as an hour, but it tends to degrade some of their effectiveness. So cover it up, put it in your shed, you know, put it someplace out of the sunlight, and you'll be fine. You could store it in a cool, dark place as long as it's labeled. You know, that so nobody accidentally misuses it,
yeah.
You know, because it is sometimes hard to mix exactly the right amount. Always try to do that. Granules that you just apply as granular fertilizer, as long as they are kept dry, they're good indefinitely. You know, once they get wet, they clump together and some of the nutrients leach out, so it's hard to know how much you're putting down and it's hard to spread. So liquids out of sunlight, don't let them freeze, not a problem now, and then granules, keep them dry.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks for calling. And Christine in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, Larry, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
And thanks for a great show, too. I have sedum plants that are growing along my driveway in a southern exposure. And usually by this time of year, they're pretty big. And the leaves are spread out and hardy looking. And in fact, you can't really kill them. But this year, for some reason, they're small, and my leaves are real shrunken up, and I don't know. I don't know if it's – I've been listening to the show. I don't know if it's this whole weather thing or if it's something else. So I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay. A couple of things. You know, we have been talking a lot about the weather and talking with others who manage landscapes. We are seeing some things are doing great. Some plants are really thriving. Others are really struggling, and moisture is always an issue, and soil. You know, sometimes if we've got a garden that's been going for many, many years and it just gets tired and worn out, if we haven't been doing organic mulches or adding some compost, research, I think it was Ohio State or somebody did research and found that if we top dress our perennial gardens with about an inch of compost every other year or every third year, and then we just let the ground beetles and other things pull that into the soil, that's often enough to fertilize our perennial plants. And then just fertilize as needed if you need to give them an additional nutrient boost. The other thing I like to do is I'll take an auger, the kind we use for planting bulbs, and I'll spread that compost and then use my auger and drill down in vacant spots in the garden, and it aerates, especially helpful for heavy clay soils, breaks up some of that clay, and it also helps move that compost down a bit faster. So, yeah, it could be the weather, but you may want to, one, have your soil tested if you haven't, but then also take a look at that soil, and if it's hard, you know, hard as a rock, not getting good drainage, it may be time to do a little top dressing with some compost. And since the plants are a little bit smaller than normal, now would be a good time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill in Madison, your turn.
Okay, I think I've got an easy one. I've been pinching my New England asters because they tend to get kind of lanky. And I've done it maybe 3 or 4 times so far, and they're maybe 3 feet tall. When should I stop pinching to make sure I get flowers?
Now, what was the plant again?
It's New England aster.
Oh, New England aster. Okay, sorry. I had trouble hearing that. So through the end of June, even into the first week of July, we can keep our mums and asters, keep them pinch back typically as short as 6 inches. But we want to, I usually say the end of June because I know gardeners and we all kind of push the limit, so that gives you a little leeway. And that'll keep them nice and small. So yours have been, you're saying you're keeping yours, they're
well, right now they're about, that. They're about 3 feet, and I've pinched them maybe 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
But I'm only taking off like an inch or so at a time.
Right. So next year what you may want to do is pinch them back up. See if they give you the growth that you want. They may still be a little bit tall. You may want to next year pinch them back a little harder, and that'll keep them a little more compact. I'm kind of sharing, I'm a low-maintenance gardener, lazy, one of the two. I'll plant ornamental grasses or things around some of my hardier mums or my asters to kind of help support them. So if I don't get out there, just like when you look at a field, they're standing up nice and tall because there's grasses around there holding them up. So that's another way.
Great idea.
You know, because who gets out there to stake them in time? Not me. It's always like, I've done that 3 weeks ago. So next year, maybe add some grasses.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Janine emailed to ask if there's a remedy for cabbage loopers.
Oh, you know, one of the things, and they're out there already, but what I like to do when I do my planting in the spring, I'll plant and then I'll cover with a floating row cover. So it does Rime, Harvest Guard, and it prevents the moths from laying their eggs, and it's great, and it works well, and it keeps the rabbits out too, which is nice. But when you don't do that, or you've already got the problem, or that's too much hassle, Bacillus thuringiensis, dipel or thuricide, check the label. You want the strain that kills only true caterpillars. And fortunately, those are the butterflies that, or the moths that aren't native that are feeding on our cabbages and broccoli. And the good news is you can apply it and then harvest. You know, you'd want to rinse it off just because of flavor, but you could harvest and eat it right away. It won't kill birds, that are eating some of those caterpillars, and it won't harm people. So dipel or thuricide, Bacillus thuringiensis, is an organic control and it works very well.
Carrie in Janesville, it's your turn. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, I just love your show, and thanks for taking my call. I planted some asparagus about 4 years ago, and the last year we picked a little bit off of it, and it was just great, and this year half the crop is gone. It died.
Oh, do you notice any? I noticed I had some asparagus beetle move into my planting this year, and asparagus beetle feeds on the stems. You can find them on the greenery, and they can damage and cause some dieback on the stems. That would be one thought, so I'd check for that. Good cleanup in the fall. There are some insecticides labeled for use, but read and follow label directions because they're out early when you're still doing your harvesting. The good news is the crowns usually survive, especially since it's a 5-year-old planting now, or 4-year-old planting. You've got a good root system established. Make sure that you don't have poor drainage. Asparagus likes well-drained soils, very drought-tolerant once established. Poor drainage can lead to rot, and but I'm guessing you may have some problems with asparagus beetles, so you might want to check for that, and then just check the drainage to be sure. And incorporating compost, being careful not to damage the roots. You know, try some of the aeration that we mentioned before, if drainage is in fact the problem.
There you go. Thank you, Carrie. And Lisa in Eau Claire emailed to ask what she could do about small green worms that are eating her columbine. She's tried removing the worms and cutting back, but they keep coming back.
You know, it sounds like columbine saw a fly. And she's pretty observant because most gardeners call me after their plants are decimated and they're done feeding. And so they're saw flies. So you have a couple options. Tolerate the damage. The good news is the plants will come back and send up fresh leaves, but you miss a lot of the beauty early in the season. So you can use an insecticide labeled for treating columbine and sawflies, something like a permethrin. You could try neem if you're looking for something organic, and just read and follow label directions. Usually it's not a problem every year. You know, good cleanup is always a good idea. And again, if you tolerate the damage, usually they'll send up a second flush of foliage. But it is very devastating because it seems like it happens overnight, but it's columbine sawfly. And so hand picking is the most eco-friendly. Neem would be your second option, and then something like a permethrin if you decide you want to use a chemical to control it.
Dave emailed to say he has knapweed and wants to know the best way to get rid of knapweed. They haven't flowered yet.
Okay. Well, digging, at least cutting back before they bloom, you're going to eliminate 1,000 of them in the future. You know, it's kind of like with your thistles. If you got to, you know, and I know the goldfinches like the thistles, but, you know, if you can get the flower heads off, at least you're eliminating the future crop until you can get back to controlling it. And it really depends on where it is, you know. If you've got other desirable plants, you know, we've talked about using a weed knife or the corn knife, which I'm going to have to try. I haven't tried one of those. You know, digging, if it's in a garden, if it's in your lawn, keeping your lawn healthy, mowing usually at least slows them down because you're cutting the flower heads off, though I have thistles that bloom low enough in the ground that they're below my mower. tricky little devils. So, and then if you're going to use a chemical, you want to make sure whatever you use isn't going to damage the plants that are also growing in that garden or in the lawn or whatever area where you're having the problem.
And Patricia on Facebook suggests that when using Roundup, use it very selectively, as when working around grapes, use a drip rather than a mist on the sprayer, mask the weed from the good plants with a nursery pot with the bottom cut out to prevent the chemical from touching the desired plants. And then Wayne, who has a from San Mateo, California, says, you know, it could be a Roundup could be a carcinogen, and to use extreme caution to keep it off skin and avoid inhaling, especially on a windy day.
You know, all good advice, no matter what product you're using, is always use care. You know, treat them carefully and with great respect. And I'm a big believer, if you're going to use something, spot treat. It saves you money, but it's much better for the environment and less exposure for you. And the nursery pot's a great idea. I always recommend a milk jug, but sometimes the weeds get bigger than a milk jug. So the nursery pot's a great idea.
I like that as well. And let's see. Oh, what about wood chips in a garden?
You know, I like to use wood chips for pathways around trees and shrubs. If I can, if you put them in your gardens, your annual vegetable and flower beds, sometimes they can temporarily tie up the nitrogen, and so your plants may be stunted or yellow and not perform as well. That's why I like things that break down faster, like shredded leaves. Evergreen needles are great. They don't make the soil too acidic. Oak and maple leaves work great. Just shred them up because they're just tough. They don't break down quickly. So shredding them with your mower is I found my mower is a great leaf shredder. So I like to use those kind of products that break down fast in my annual gardens. It means you reapply them, but as they break down, they're improving the soil. So here's a way to look at it. When you mulch, you're suppressing weeds, you're conserving moisture, you're moderating the soil temperature. Mm-hmm. Organic mulches, you improve the soil. So you get four benefits from that one action. It may make it easier to take.
Melinda, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Larry. Always fun to talk to you and your listeners, and you have a great day.
Melinda Myers, take a look at her website. We have a link on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. To all of her things. So go there and take a look and link on to Melinda's site. She's got a great one. Wow. Monday, the weather guys are going to be back to talk about the summer forecast and to answer your questions, your weather questions. Hope you can join us. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.